A New Life in the New World by Angela Yanes. Illustrations by Tanya Dinora Riccio. Genre: historical fiction is based on real events in history, but is a story that didn't really happen. The characters and specific events are invented by the author. As you read, look for the facts on which this story is based. Question of the week. What opportunities can be found in new places? The year is 1620. Caleb and his family are about to set sail from Plymouth, England, to start a new life on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. In the story opening, Caleb's grandmother gives him a journal as a gift, which Caleb uses to document their journey and their experiences as they set up home in the New World. Caleb looked at his grandmother. She was in the long gray dress she always wore. Her gray hair was tucked up into a white bonnet. She always wore that too. She was very small. Caleb was only 10, but he was nearly as tall as his 60-year-old grandmother. She looked sad. "You're going on a very long journey," she said. "I probably won't see you again, but I have something for you to remember me by." She brought her hands out from behind her back. There was a red leather book in them. She held it out to Caleb. He took it and opened it. There was nothing in the book. No writing, no pictures, just empty pages. Caleb was puzzled. "There's nothing in it," he said. "What is it?"
"It's a journal," said his grandmother.
"You're going to write in it. As you write, imagine you're talking to me and telling me all the wonderful things you see and do in your new life in the new world. Will you do that for me?"
"Yes, I will," promised Caleb.
September 6, 1620. I woke up very early this morning. A hand was shaking me. "Wake up, Caleb, wake up!" It was my mother's voice, but I couldn't see her at first. I could only see the light of the candle in her hand. "Get up, Caleb," she said. I sat up and rubbed my eyes. My mother was standing beside my bed. She was wearing the long gray dress she always wears, with her hair tucked up into her white bonnet, just like you, grandmother. Well, just like all the women in our community. "What time is it?" I asked. "It's nearly 5," mother said. "We must go down to the quarry side. The ship to the new world sails this morning. We mustn't miss it. Hurry up! Your father and your sisters are ready. They're waiting for us." It was very busy down on the wharf. People were running this way and that. Everyone was shouting. There were boxes and bundles everywhere. People were selling hot pies. I was hungry. My father bought me one. And then there was the strange scent of the sea, a sort of mixture of salt and fish and dirt. Charlotte and Bess didn't like it, but I did. It didn't smell very nice, that's true, but it was new. It was exciting. It was fun. It was all part of the adventure. And then we saw the ship. It was called the Mayflower. The name was painted on the hull. "It's very small for so many people," Charlotte whispered to me. She looked frightened. I laughed at her. "How would you know?" I asked. "You've never seen a ship before." "Come on," father said. "It's time to board." September 9, 1620. It's now 3 days since we left Plymouth. 102 passengers are sailing on the Mayflower. There are 17 children aboard, apart from us. I know them all now. Well, one of them is a baby. I don't know him very well, of course. But I talked to the other children. We're all wondering what the new world will be like. There are 30 members of the crew, but they hardly ever talk to us. They're too busy. The master of the ship is a man called Christopher Jones. He welcomed us aboard, but I haven't seen him since. I like the sound of the wind filling the sails. It's a sort of slapping sound. I think we're making good progress. I hope so. I don't like the food very much. We eat salt pork, horrible, ship's biscuits, very hard, and burgoo every day. Burgoo is a sort of soup,
It's watery and swishes about in the wooden bowls Mother brought. It isn't bad, but I'm tired of it now. October 10, 1620. I'm sorry, Grandmother, but I haven't written in my journal for a long time now. I couldn't. The sea turned very rough. The sailors say it's the season for storms in the Atlantic. Nearly everyone was sick. Charlotte and Bess were very ill. They stayed below deck for days. I felt bad, too. But I didn't go below deck. It smelled horrible down there. It's better on deck, even when it's raining. But you can't write when the ship's pitching and tossing. It's much better today, thank goodness. I hope we're nearly there. October 11, 1620. Something really exciting happened this morning. Bess and I were standing on the deck, looking out to sea. There's not much else to do on board except scan the sea and look for land on the horizon. There's no land yet. Suddenly, a fountain of water shot up into the air. Then we saw an enormous fishtail coming up out of the water. It was huge, Grandmother. One of the sailors saw it too. "What's that?" I asked him. He laughed. "It's a whale," he said. "We often see whales around about this time in the crossing. They're migrating at this time of year." I'm not very good at drawing, but Bess says the whale looked just like this. I'm going to show the picture to Charlotte now. She's going to be so jealous she didn't see the whale. November 9, 1620. We're here! After 66 days at sea, we're really here. We can see land. I can actually see the docks. The sailors say it's a place called Cape Cod. We thought we were going to land in North Virginia, but here we are in Cape Cod. I don't mind. I'm tired of this voyage now. I just want to stand on dry land again. Cape Cod is a sort of bay. It's very pretty, but there's not much here. Father says we have to find a place where we can settle properly and start our new life in the new world. He doesn't think this is the right place for us. We need to plant food, so we need good farmland. Brr! It's cold here. All those weeks at sea, I yearned to be on dry land again. But now the land feels like it's moving. It isn't, of course. It just feels that way because we've been on the Mayflower for so long. December 25, 1620. It's Christmas Day today, and we have been searching for somewhere to settle for 16 days now. We've been exploring the country around about on foot. It's been hard because it's so cold, and we've been sleeping rough under hedges, anywhere we could really find. But now Father and the other men think we have found the perfect place. They say it's good farmland, and it's flat, and there are a lot of trees, so there's wood for us to build with. We started our journey in Plymouth in England, so we're going to call our settlement here New Plymouth. We all think that's a really great name for our new home. We're going to start building the houses tomorrow, before it gets any colder. February 27, 1621. We're working very hard. Most of the houses are ready now. They're small, wooden houses. We live in one of them. There's a schoolhouse, too, so now I go to school every day. The most beautiful building is the church, which is in the middle of our new town. That's the largest building in New Plymouth. We have enclosed land for our farms, too, and we're planting the seeds that we brought with us all the way from England. We have two cows, so we have milk, and we have hens, too, so we have eggs. Our new life in the new world is going to be good. Of course, the land here is different from the land we are used to. I mean, it is very different. I saw a large colored snake on our farm this morning. I went close to look at it. It had bright red stripes and sort of black diamond shapes on it. Father told me to get away from it. He said it might be dangerous. I don't think there are any dangerous snakes in England. Well, there's the adder, but it won't kill you. March 16, 1621. Grandmother, a stranger came to the settlement today. He had long hair and wore weird clothes made from animal skins. He stood there, staring at us as we toiled on the farm. Father says he's a Native American Indian. He spoke to us. He could speak English, but not very well. His name is Samoset. He watched us for a while and then disappeared, but he came back soon with a friend. His friend speaks English much better than he does. His name is Squanto. Squanto says that the Native Americans in this area are members of the Wampanoag tribe. He says he speaks English because some English explorers caught him and took him to England as a slave. But now he's back here. It's great for us because Father says there are a lot of Native Americans around here. Squanto can help us communicate with them. Squanto doesn't think our English seeds will grow here, but Father thinks he's wrong. September 30, 1621. Father was wrong, and Squanto was right. It's harvest time, but there are no crops to harvest. The seeds didn't grow. Our new life in the new world is a disaster. What are we going to do? Squanto says that the Native Americans will help us next year. They will show us what seeds grow well here in New Plymouth. He says they will show us how to survive in the new world. That's all very well, but what about now? We have no food to eat, except for the berries that the women and girls go out to pick. We can't just live on berries. But this afternoon, Squanto brought us a bird to eat. It's not a bird we know. It's like a chicken, but much, much bigger. Squanto says it's called a turkey, and it is native to the New World. Mother, Charlotte, and Bess are cooking the turkey. It smells good. I hope it tastes good. March 4, 1622. We have planted our farm again, this time with the seeds Squanto brought to us. A lot of the Wampanoag Indians come and help us now. They're very kind. I now have a Wampanoag friend. His name is Bayen. I met him first about a week ago. I was on our farm. There was a rabbit there. Rabbits here look just like rabbits in England, Grandmother. Anyway, I was sitting on a tree trunk, watching the rabbit, when Bayen came up behind me. He said, "Asko wikwasin," to me. I don't know, but I think he was saying good morning. So I said, "Hello." Then he pointed to the rabbit and said, "Matukwas," which I guess means rabbit in the Wampanoag language. So I said, "Matukwas," too. And Bayen laughed and clapped his hands. Then I said, "Rabbit." And Bayen repeated, "Rabbit," carefully. I hope you're impressed, Grandmother. I'm learning the Wampanoag language, and I'm teaching my new friend English. October 1, 1622. It worked! Our harvest was great this year. We followed Squanto's advice and grew Indian corn. Squanto told us to use dead fish to fertilize the ground, so we did. The Wampanoag showed us how to plant beans and pumpkins. They introduced us to melons, too. They took us hunting. We caught deer, wild fowl, and rabbits. We already had chickens and cows, but the Native Americans gave us pigs, goats, and sheep. We weren't really farmers when we arrived in the New World. Most of us came from cities, but now we are farmers. The Wampanoag have made us into farmers. November 24, 1623. The Wampanoag live in the village where they have lived for thousands of years. We've been here for 3 years now. We're the newcomers here. But the Native Americans have helped us a lot. We wouldn't have survived without them. You can imagine how grateful we are to them, Grandmother. That is why we have invited them to eat with us today. In 1621, we had a little party to celebrate starting our new life in the New World. But this party is going to be different. This party is to say thank you to our Native American friends, and they're all invited. We have been preparing for the party for days. What's on the menu? Deer, corn, shellfish, and roasted meat. It's going to be a great party. I wish you could be here, Grandmother. I'm sorry, but this is the very last page in my journal. I'll try to make another one. I wish I could see you in person to tell you how happy I am with my new life in the New World.